Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend. Just a couple of weeks away, and it will be the big holiday season. You can feel it in the air. You can feel it, I don't know, yesterday even out at the Cardinals game and the GCU game. I did the double yesterday. It was a pretty simple double to do. The double is you go to two big sporting events going on in our busy city, and you do them at the within a few hours of one another. You make sure that you're both places. You're there long enough at both places to understand what the tone and the tenor is of the game that you're covering. And so yesterday was what I love. I love doing the double. I didn't care much for going to Glendale and seeing a sloppy field. I didn't. And sloppy football. Saw some really good basketball in downtown Phoenix yesterday. So it was a good weekend. It was a good weekend all the way around. There's some interesting things to talk about today. I emceed a really cool event, 24 years of doing bicycle for kids. So it was busy. Daughter was on stage at church yesterday preaching. That's always a cool thing when I see my daughter doing something as meaningful as that. And went to a party and talked anything but sports. So it was great. It was great. And very much looking forward to today's show. We're going to have Brad Edwards with us later this morning, ESPN College Football Insider. A good friend of the show on the national perspective of the 2018 season, the Heisman Trophy. I will talk about that today and why I voted for Kyler Murray when it was all said and done. I wrote about it on the site. And we'll also get Brad's view of what happened here in 2018 with both Herm Edwards and Kevin Sumlin. More on that in a minute. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And when I say you do it with life insurance, it could be annuities. I was with a friend of mine on Saturday. This friend has had some tough stuff go on with their family. This friend has had some tough things go on in their financial situation. This friend just asked me plain and simple, so you got your license, you're with Sagicor. I said, yeah, they're with me, I'm with them. It's a great partnership. And he asked some very straightforward questions about retirement planning. He asked some very straightforward questions about what to do with his family and structuring and annuities. You can do that at Sagicor. Just log on, get your free quote, do it online at Sagicor Now. Sagicor, protect what matters most. We appreciate their support. Little housekeeping. So we will be here Thursday as well, right through the week till Thursday. Thursday after the show, we're heading to Vegas. Jordan is going to go and cover the ASU game, the football game against Fresno State. Eric, you're going as a fan? Is that right? That's the hot rumor on the street is you are going to Vegas simply to be a fan.
Probably going to do a little bit of work, but I'm mostly going just because, I don't know, I'm excited to see ASU play in this Vegas Bowl.
Without N'Keal Harry.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
He shouldn't play.
He shouldn't
not,
play.
I mean, as soon as the bowl game was announced, I was like, N'Keal Harry's probably not going to come back to ASU. And if he doesn't come back, there's no reason for him to play in the bowl game.
Have you started to hear the narrative being led by Ray Anderson of the hiring of Herm Edwards a year ago that, see, you can go bring in a guy in his 60s. Look at what North Carolina is doing with Mack Brown. And look at some coaches that have been around a while that are bumping around and doing their thing.
Yes and no. The situation with Mack Brown's a little different. Number one, he used to coach at North Carolina. Number two, he won a national championship and has been a relevant head football coach within the last decade. Herm Edwards hadn't coached in any college capacity in close to 30 years. So I think the people in Chapel Hill are more optimistic than the people were here in Tempe.
Sure.
But yeah,
sure.
I'm sure Ray Anderson is like leaning back in his office with his hands above his head and saying, yep, you thought I didn't know what I was doing.
It's not like
ASU is on the brink of a national championship.
No.
Let's be clear about this. No. But the product this year has been pretty good.
It was Todd's players. Heard that one.
Not on defense.
And I don't buy
Their best players on defense are mostly freshmen.
And
so.
I didn't buy the... It was Todd's players. It was Mike Norvell's players, really, when you think about it, that were the playmakers.
Yes.
N'Keal, Chase.
Manny Wilkins.
Manny Wilkins, yep. Those were Mike Norvell guys. People say you're disparaging Todd. No, I'm just pointing out fact. And Todd has not been hired as of yet, which I am a bit surprised about. I know that Rich was on the North Carolina people about looking at his direction. Mack Brown made a ton of sense. Todd, I would have thought, would have circuits that at Colorado. I think he would make perfect sense, or the job at Texas Tech. But for whatever reason, he has been skipped over to this point. This should be the week that I'm hearing that NAU is going to have their coach by tomorrow or Wednesday. Why it is not Charlie Ragel at this point, I do not know. Why is Chris Ball's name the front and center for that job? Again, it has to do with an athletic director that worked with Chris. Chris was here at ASU. He's at Memphis now. But it's familiarity. There really is no fear of the unknown, though. If you're Mike Morrow and you turn over the rocks on Charlie Ragel, you're not going to find many rocks that are going to have anything bad about Charlie Ragel, if any. And he's going to immediately catapult Northern Arizona University into a different stratosphere. I saw where U of A offered Will Plummer over the weekend. Will Plummer at Gilbert. Eric, have you seen him? Did you ever get to catch him in person?
Nope, I have not seen him
yet. My gosh, I caught him. I did one of their games. He is so much fun to watch. Total gunslinger. He's been offered by Texas Tech. He plays both sides of the football. He got the tar kicked out of him this year. Gilbert only had 25 players, so he had to play the whole game. Played linebacker, played safety, played quarterback, punted, kicked. Never left the field.
I did see Jack Plummer play last year, his little brother, who's now at Purdue, and he was a really good quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. Will, so U of A offers a quarterback. ASU has offered Denson over at Pinnacle. U of A, ASU, neither one have offered Chubba Purdy as of yet, which I find interesting. We're talking about quarterbacks in college football recruiting. There's five more days left in the recruiting period right now, the contact period. So why NAU has not hired their coach yet and then had that coach go out and knock on doors for like the last week in this early contact period? I get it. It's a different job than Arizona State or Arizona. Like Thursday when we're going to Vegas. Thursday, there's a quarterback in Southern California who's going to make his announcement on Thursday, and ASU is in the lead, and ASU already has two commitments from quarterbacks, so this is going to be a busy, busy, busy week. I talked to a college assistant coach on Thursday. We met up for lunch, and this college assistant coach was going right down the list of players that might flip. So if you're into recruiting, as many of you are that watch this, if you have a favorite college program, there's going to be some flipping, I do believe, that goes on this week, which will be fun to talk about. But ASU Fresno State will be there on the ground Thursday, Friday, Saturday, thanks to Santan Ford and Tim Hovick and the Arizona Ford dealers. We appreciate Santan Ford, and of course, the Arizona Ford dealers will be in Vegas and TV show, of course, this week on Fox Sports Arizona. All that to say, the Cardinal game yesterday was, again, a new low. I don't know why the field was in such bad shape. I can't have someone try to explain to me about what didn't work. All I know is it didn't work. The field was slipping and sliding all around yesterday, and the play on the field was atrocious. And I know it's towards the end of the season, and there are teams that are playing with chopped up meatloaf. There's not enough offensive linemen and defensive linemen in the game. Guys are battling injuries. The team is out of it. It's a sloppy game. The defense of the Cardinals, which is supposed to be Steve Wilks' calling card, just folded their tents late in the game after the Cardinals cut it to 10-3. The Lions threw the football a grand total of four times in the second half yesterday. You know what that means? That means just turn around. We don't think. No. We know. They can't compete with us. So we're going to turn around and we're going to run it right down the opposition's throats, which is the most demoralizing aspect in pro football. There were penalties all over the field. All in all, it was a dreadful game. And I came to the conclusion yesterday that Steve Wilks needs to be replaced. I'm not one that sits here and fires coaches. I'm not. Last year, I told you Todd Graham was going to be fired. I never said he should be fired. Big difference. Those that only hear what they want to hear thought I said repeatedly, Todd Graham needs to be fired. No, Todd Graham should have been fired, and he was going to be fired. By the end, it was very clear what was going on. So the deal with Steve Wilks. Steve Wilks came here in January. And Steve Wilks, I've written about this, talked about this, but yesterday it's even more pronounced. He had Sam Bradford and he had Mike McCoy, and it was an offense and it was a retool, not a rebuild. And all of that has changed. And when I see his defense, I know Robert Kimdiche went into the locker room. I know they've had injuries. I know that Tyrann Mathieu had a great season in Houston. Fans are pointing all that out to me. So there's been miscalculations and just flat misses on the player personnel side and moves that you look back on and say, why did they do this? Steve Wilks just doesn't appear to me to be a guy that is a head coach material guy. And so the Cardinals have missed. It's very simple, Michael. It's very simple. Walk up to the podium. We respect Coach Wilks. We wish him the best. It didn't work out, and we are moving on. Questions? Yeah, why didn't it work out? Well, there's many reasons for that. Let's just say that it's time to go a different direction. There are things that I didn't like that I was seeing. Well, can you describe those things? Look at the win-loss record, and I think that answers your question. Like, I can sit here and impromptu do this. I don't have a script in front of me. Michael's a sharp enough guy. Michael, it's not that hard. It really isn't. It's not working. And I don't think it's going to work next year, and so you're going to be 4 or 5 games into next season, and you're going to have to pull the plug anyways. You brought him here to coach a different team. It's not the same team. It's just not. Sam Bradford didn't work out. Mike McCoy didn't work out. Take this and just pull the plug and get out there now, because there's some good names I think you could look at and say, I'll bring them in. Josh Rosen, for his benefit, does not need a defensive coach as his head coach. Byron Leftwich is doing a nice job, I think, at times. I don't know why Larry Fitzgerald wasn't targeted more in the first half yesterday. I can't throw the ball to him. But you look at Byron Leftwich, and he's learning on the job, too. Is this really fair to Josh Rosen and his development? We'll talk more about this as the show progresses. On the other side, we're going to switch gears because the Suns are in the news today. The Suns are front and center in the news and from college basketball, too. There was actually good hoops at the arena. Eric was there, as was I. We'll get into that next. Then Brad Edwards in about 15 minutes. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, for the last 9 years, we've talked about how, or 8 years, coming up on 9, how the Suns have missed the playoffs, and this week will be a very big week in downtown Phoenix because Robert Sarver and the city council are trying to find a way to have improvements to the tune of $150 million to $200 million, depending on whose opinions you read. Regardless, it's public dollars to fix up the arena and to refurbish it. A little bit of history on this. Now we'll get into the on-the-court product. We had Jerry Colangelo on the show, I'd say, I don't know, 4 years ago, and I asked him about the refab of U.S. Airways, Talking Stick Resort, all the names that it's been. And he said the footprint is too small. It's in Madison Square Garden. It's about the same. It's just wedged in there to do a major overhaul of the arena. We've heard about the Suns wanting to possibly move. I've seen models of them out on Talking Stick. I've seen models and heard about models of them out where the Diamondback Spring training facility currently sits. While that hasn't exactly worked out, that could be an option too. I've heard about the Suns and Coyotes in a partnership. Don't believe that's happening. I've heard Phoenix Rising everywhere. I believe Phoenix Rising wants to be by themselves because they have bigger fish to fry, like concerts, and have their venue for many other things. The concerts are becoming, and the other events are becoming, more important than the team itself that is housed within the facility. Just so you guys can connect dots on this. Yesterday I was at the arena, and full disclosure, I don't go to many Suns games anymore because there's no reason to, because the owner is not committed to winning. The owner is committed to tripling his investment. I can sit in the comfort of my own home and watch bad basketball as easily as I can go down to the arena and watch that slop too. When I've been to the arena, I have felt as though it is aging. I have felt as though it's not as shiny and nice as it once was. I really felt that yesterday for the first time. And maybe it's because now this is top of mind. Eric, are you in on this with me where walking around the arena, does it just feel the same, or does it feel like the building's showing its age a little bit?
It seems fine to me. But I'm not that caught up in what the building looks like. I'm more caught up on like what the product on the floor is. And that's a discussion for a whole nother day. So, arena is old by current modern day arena standards, But again, that's, you know, I'll be curious to see how this plays out too, because Sarver really hasn't like done much to sway the public opinion on, yes, this team definitely needs a new arena. And if you're going to invest that much money into it, there's no need to just gut it. You might as well just like start all over.
Well, here's the part of it that I look at and say, when everybody goes to the product on the floor, that these owners in pro sports leagues, most of them don't care. All they care about is, what does my bottom line look like? So in Robert's case, he's tripled his investment. I was listening to one of the news stations in town this morning as I was driving in, and all they want to talk about is how bad the record has been under the guise of, and they're going to raise taxes. Isn't that crazy? So forcing your opinion on someone rather than just looking at it objectively. Just so you know, Robert Sarver is wildly successful in the banking industry. He's wildly successful with this team. Doesn't mean he hasn't had his rough lumps, and I've sat here and ripped him for years and years. He's brutal as an owner of an NBA team, just brutal. In the banking world and people that work for him here in town, businessman, there's people that swear by him, that love him, think he's loyal, that takes care of him, and that's how he is. You can't, in my opinion, you cannot equate what happens on the floor 100% entirely as to whether or not the arena needs improvements. Robert, being a banker, is trying to negotiate his best deal. That's what bankers do. So at some point when the conversation flips to, well, maybe we should just go to Las Vegas, or maybe we should leave downtown Phoenix. And both of those are sure to happen here in the next few weeks, months. They've happened some behind the scenes. I don't think they've happened as deep as they will when this is all figured out. Wednesday will be a big day in our town. Wednesday will be a big day. I will just tell you, Wednesday night, short of the stock market being down already 500 points today, which it is, it's not a great day. People are going to get nervous about that. There will be what they call in the business team coverage. They'll sit around a big conference room, big table, and they're going to go put this person down at the arena, and they're going to show the council and what they're going to say, and then they're going to go shoot some poor reporter out to go find a fan who agrees with Robert Sarver and one that disagrees with Robert Sarver, and they're going to put it on the evening news, and it's going to be garbage. It's going to be low-grade dog food, but that's what they do. There's not going to be 15 minutes of sitting here explaining it. And at the concert side, when the Diamondbacks announced Billy Joel's coming, everybody's like, oh, wow, Billy Joel's coming to Chase Field. Yeah, Chase Field's going to go get in the concert business now, because their baseball product only fills 81 days. And they're not going to be very good for the next couple of years. There's got to be other ways to bring in revenue. It's business. I know you just want your games, but here's what's going on. In terms of on the floor, Trevor Ariza is going to get traded by the Suns. He's a valued asset. He is coming. He has a one-year deal that the Suns signed him to. Pretty smart deal at the time that they signed him to, in my opinion. Good veteran leader. They're going to ship him off. Whenever the Suns have a former player go to the Lakers, it's never good. I remember when Cedric Ceballos went to the Lakers, and that did not sit well with Suns fans. There's one team that fans really hate here in Phoenix because the Lakers always get over on them. Almost always. But I mean, the Lakers have gotten over because they've won a bunch of championships. The Suns have not. LeBron James wanted Tyson Chandler. Tyson Chandler didn't want to be here. He's a pro. He played out the part. And what do you know? He's released and he's in the starting lineup for the Lakers. And all of a sudden, he's playing. What a shock. The Suns and Trevor Ariza are going to part ways here in the next couple days. The Suns are going to be able to remove money off their books. It gives them more salary cap room, gives them a better opportunity to go out in the market and go pursue big-time free agents. The problem is there anybody at all that wants to come here and play? And is this just the front end of what I believe will be the inevitable, and that's Devin Booker will end up in L.A.? Devin Booker will end up in L.A. at some point in time. He's not going to finish his career in Phoenix. I can sit here and say that in 2018 in full 100% confidence. Nobody said anything to me about it. It's just the way the league is set up. You have a player that goes and plays in the minor leagues, which the Suns never used to be. They used to be the destination point. But then that player goes through his years, and these former Suns players like Tyson Chandler and Trevor Ariza, who are good locker room guys, from my understanding, they go to a place like the Lakers. And if you don't think that there's recruiting that's going on, you're naive. They're going to end up saying, you need to come here and play. They're going to go get paid, and it doesn't matter if it's the Clippers or the Lakers. But if Trevor Ariza gets traded to the Lakers, there's no way, no chance that Robert can explain that to Suns fans and they'll rationally accept it. There's no way, no chance that James Jones can explain that. I've already heard the jokes circulate. I was listening over on Sirius, their NBA channel, and they're already wondering openly if James Jones is tied into Clutch Sports, the agency that has LeBron and others, and just trying to make deals happen for them. It's already wondering, because this franchise has gone to this spot. So there's two places where the Suns are going to get hammered on this week. There's no way they can win this in asking for public funds to redo the arena. Not a chance. There's no way, no chance that they're going to win in the court of public opinion on Trevor Ariza. So they're 4-22. They're going to be 4-23, 99.9% chance after tonight's game against the Clippers. They are worse than they were a year ago. Devin Booker gets into it publicly in front of media in the locker room with DeAndre Ayton. It's only early December, guys, and all this nonsense is going down. And you look at James Jones, and he's probably on the Prilosec diet now, too. Just like Ryan McDonough was, just like, all the way back to 2009. Brad Edwards is next. We'll talk some college football. A reminder, we'll be in Las Vegas starting on Thursday night, and we will be a part of Arizona State and Fresno State doing coverage up there, Sports 360 AZ, and of course, our television show, Brad Sismat Football AZ. Mike Norvell's name is in the news today. The former Sun Devil is now reportedly one of three for the Kansas State job. So that's good news for Mike, as he's done a good job over there at Memphis after leaving Todd Graham's staff. Let's turn our attention for a couple of minutes to Arizona State getting ready for Fresno State and college football as we put a bow on 2018 U of A as well. Brad Edwards, always good to have Brad with us, ESPN college football insider, good friend of the show, a national perspective, joining us here on the program. From a year ago to today, Brad, when Kevin Sumlin and Herm Edwards were hired, did it work out in year one as you expected it to for the Sun Devils and Wildcats?
I would say certainly it didn't for the Wildcats. I mean, given Khalil Tate being there already, I think a lot of people felt like it was a great fit with Sumlin, and I think it's fair to say that most of the country, if not more specifically the Pac-12, was expecting greater things out of UA this year. But, obviously a head coach is going to be judged on, you know, what he's doing in year three and year four, not in year one. So we'll see where someone goes from here. On the Arizona State front, there was so much negativity mm-hmm. about the Herm Edwards hire that I think that anything other than a disastrous season was going to be better than people were making it out to be. And I don't know what the reaction was locally, but nationally, I felt like that was the way that it was kind of spun, which is like, this is a ridiculous hire. People were scratching their heads. Why are they doing this? And I think all things considered, especially when you look at how close some of the losses were for ASU, it was a better season than people expected. And, obviously, the game when they played each other gave us everything we've come to expect from that rivalry, which is complete unpredictability and insanity. And so that was just kind of my take on what happened out there this year.
Brad Edwards with us. So Arizona State, Fresno State is not going to headline a lot of sportscasts and a lot of shows, but I think on the surface, it's a pretty darn good matchup. You know, look at Fresno State and the job that was done there and getting that program turned around, and then Herm getting his team there. You have a thought on the matchup this Saturday in Vegas?
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun game. Fresno is a team that I don't think has gotten the attention that they should have gotten nationally, partly because of UCF being up there as the most publicized team out of the group of five. And then partly because Fresno State didn't take care of its own business when it had a chance in the second half to win at Boise State the first time they played there. And so if those things hadn't been in place, then who knows how much more people would be aware of Fresno. But they are I think, a legit top 25 team. You know, it's not that uncommon for a group of five teams with high win totals to eventually get into the top 25 late in the year. You always see that happen because voters, you know, don't want to rank a four or five loss team from a Power Five league.
Right.
But it is rare to see group of five teams get into the top 25 of some of our metrics. And Fresno has been considered a top 25 team by FPI for pretty much the second half of the season. They've been up there. And so I think this is a really good team. Their strength is on defense, as I'm sure you're aware. They're a pretty good offensive team, but I think they're really good on defense and up against what I think is a pretty good offense that ASU has. It should be a fun matchup.
Talking with Brad Edwards. So the age thing in this game, I say thing loosely, Jeff Tedford's 57, Herm's in his 60s. You see Mac Brown go to North Carolina. Brad, are we seeing the pendulum swing a direction of, we don't need the hot young assistant coach, let's go find the veteran guy and see if they can get it turned around in the right direction? Rocky Long at San Diego State's a guy who comes to my mind as well. What do you make out of the age of these coaches that are now running the sidelines, and is it a new trend, a good trend?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if I buy into it as a trend yet. There's no question that there are quite a few names that you would be able to roll off. When you start looking at it, I think there are kind of unique circumstances in a lot of these situations. Arizona State and Kansas State were, excuse me, Kansas, Arizona State and Kansas were yep. both situations where the, you know, one of the people very instrumental in making the hire had a degree of familiarity with the coach and a degree of comfort with him, and so went in that direction. And then obviously with North Carolina, I think within the board, a lot of the big money guys, maybe not even the board, but the boosters, mm-hmm. They had a lot of familiarity with Mac Brown because he had been the coach there before. So I think some of that is at work. And so it's not really something I see as a trend. I think it's almost an anomaly. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how these guys all pan out, because I can tell you pretty much man for man, there's been a great deal of pessimism about these hires, and we'll see if one of them can end up rising well above the expectations.
A couple other questions, we'll let you go. Your reaction on the Heisman and how it played out?
Yeah, I would say that that was my expectation after the way that the regular season ended on Championship Saturday, was that Kyler Murray would win. And as great of a season as Tua had at Alabama, the reality is Kyler Murray played so well week after week that he never gave him a cushion. Mm-hmm. He never had enough room, a margin for error, you know, where he could have a bad game like he had in the SEC championship. And I think Kyler Murray was very deserving of winning it. And it's going to be fun to see him up against the Alabama defense in the Orange Bowl.
And how do you make the CFP work from your view? Four teams now to eight. Just look at this year. Two-pronged question. You look at these final four teams. And then are you in that mindset of, guys, let's get on to expansion here?
I'm not yet. I mean, I don't think I would mind seeing an 18 playoff. There's some things about it that I would enjoy. But I'm not opposed to four teams either. I think really the biggest issue that people have with the four teams, whether they want to admit it or whether they even realize it, is that it seems to be the same teams over and over.
Right. Yes.
And that's why it's the same conferences over and over, is because it's the same teams. It's because Alabama's there every year. Clemson has been there every year since the first one. And then Oklahoma now, three times out of the last 4 years? And all four of these years, all five of these years, Ohio State, when they haven't gotten in, they've been right there on the edge as almost the next team out. And so I think people just get tired of watching the same teams over and over. And I think that's why they want to see more teams in the field. It's because they want to see more teams on the field. You know, they want to see different uniforms out there playing for the national championship. And I get that. Look, at some point, Nick Saban is going to retire, and Alabama won't be there every year anymore, and they'll probably be replaced by someone else in the SEC, but eventually the names are going to change.
Where are we at with the Pac-12 nationally? Because it seems like every week there's something coming out that is not good. It doesn't matter if it's refereeing or Mike Leach criticizing the conference. On the basketball side, they've really struggled. They're not a part of the playoff. Larry Scott's under siege. There's no DirecTV deal still. Where's the Pac-12 viewed nationally, and is it a crisis mode from your view?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that it's now clearly the fifth of the Power Five. Now, I don't think it's close to, I guess, the American, which you'd look at as the best of outside of the Power Five. There's still separation there, and part of that's because of the money. But yeah, there is a crisis, in my opinion. I mean, just look at the product in the two most important sports, football and men's basketball. And it's not what it needs to be. I mean, this is the second year in a row that they haven't really been good on the football side, or at least, good enough to really seriously contend for the national championship. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you, I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg thing as far as getting the other problems first before the teams can get better on the field. I just know they need to get better on the field. And I don't know what that next step is. I think it certainly will help if they can get a win that would change perception somewhat. And those wins are only going to come against top 10 opponents. And those games are typically just going to come in the bowl season and then in September. And in the bowls, it's really just the Rose Bowl, the only opportunity that I see. So I think Washington could do a little bit if they can beat Ohio State, but outside of that, it's going to have to wait till next year. And like I said, it's only going to be accomplished by going out and beating good teams from other leagues.
As always, I appreciate your time and your insight on all things across the plane of college football. Brad, thanks.
Thank you, Brad. Take care.
It's Brad Edwards with us, ESPN, college football insider and analyst. Good stuff there. It is crisis mode for the Pac-12. It is. Even in Arizona State's case, if you lose to Fresno State, that's a black eye towards the conference. Every team that is in a bowl game, and I understand N'Keal Harry's not playing. I get that. And that's a big blow for ASU. I agree with N'Keal not playing. But you got to find ways to win games against teams that are not of a bigger conference. This would be a setback if it comes up short for the Sun Devils this coming Saturday. We're talking about GCU basketball on the other side and what they did downtown on Monday. That's next. So there's some cool stuff going on in college basketball. I've been one that has said, let's look at where Grand Canyon is, where ASU is, where U of A is. NAU is trying to get it figured out with Jack Murphy. U of A lost yesterday at Alabama. They've had kind of an up and down start to the season. There's good news on the horizon in terms of college basketball. The new AP poll is out today. The number one team in the nation is Kansas in the AP poll. Kansas is here in, I should see who they're playing. Kansas is here playing ASU a week from this Saturday. I don't remember the last time we had a number one ranked basketball team, and I'm sure it's not been that far off, and I'm just not knowing it. When was the last time we had the number one ranked college basketball team in the nation come to Phoenix to play a game? Well, it was yesterday, and it was Gonzaga, and Eric was there. I just answered the question. When was the last time they went and played an ASU or U of A? That's another question I'm not sure off the top of my head. Gonzaga was there yesterday in downtown Phoenix playing Tennessee. It's the Jerry Colangelo Classic. Why would the two teams of that magnitude play on a Sunday on a neutral court opposite the NFL, where very few people are paying attention on a Sunday afternoon? Well, because guys like us say, we're going to go watch. And after that game was over, Eric saw it. I did not. Tennessee upset the number one team in the nation yesterday right here in Phoenix. Kind of just blipped on by. After that, Nevada, who was ranked sixth in the nation, played Grand Canyon University. Neutral court, doubleheader yesterday. All right, what'd you make out of yesterday, E?
Amazing. Both games had a feel of March Madness. Gonzaga, tons of fans, as usual. Like, dating back to the late 90s when those underdog Gonzaga teams came through and played in the early rounds of the tournament, like the Valley just sort of seems to flock
yep.
to their games, and a lot of Valley high school kids end up going to Gonzaga. Tennessee flying under the radar, they're a top 10 team, and although the arena wasn't totally full, you just got the sense that like there is big time college basketball going on that floor, and there definitely was in the early game.
Well, and the whole thing about the arena being full anymore, how many people are watching? How many people are consuming it online? We don't know.
Because I didn't know what the crowd was going to be like. Because those are, I mean, you talk about a neutral site game.
Yeah.
One team's from Washington, the other team's from Tennessee. And I know, yes, there are a lot of Gonzaga fans, but that's as neutral site as you can get.
And I walked into the arena. I got there at 12. And there was orange. There was a lot of
orange.
There
was a lot.
There was a lot of Tennessee fans. And I was surprised by that.
I think that win for Tennessee is obviously going to help them.
Sure.
And I don't think the loss for Gonzaga is going to hurt them.
No.
Because Tennessee's a team that's probably going to make it at least to the Sweet 16.
Okay, so the second game, I thought GCU caught Nevada in a good scheduling situation.
Obviously.
Let's just call it as it is. Nevada had a tough game in LA Friday night against ASU.
Yeah, late Friday night.
Late Friday night. Okay.
A game that they were behind for a considerable amount. Yeah.
Good. And in ASU's case, Remy Martin didn't play well. I myself would shut Remy Martin down. It doesn't matter if they win these next four games. I know you want to win for the tournament with Georgia. Was it Georgia, Vandy, Kansas, Princeton? You got to be right for Pac-12, and he just doesn't look right. He was 1 of 10 on Friday night. That game ended so late, not many people watched it, I'm sure. But I'd consider that. So GCU, I thought, put up a good fight. You know, I have some people that said, when is GCU ever going to have a breakthrough victory? They haven't had the breakthrough win, so on and so forth. Louisville was, to me, a really good game. If you just think back to that, it's not that long ago. It was no disgrace for them to lose. You were there afterwards. You have some stuff you want to throw to?
Yeah. So this was Dan Marley shortly after the game ended. Just sort of reiterating what you talked about, Brad, that the situation of close but not close enough again.
Yeah.
You know, Nevada was coming off a tough stretch. You know, to play Friday night late and then just have one day to prepare. And we sat there for a week, so I expected us to play well. To be honest with you, Paul, I'm tired of saying our team plays well and we lose. That's just not who we are. Whether it's the number 16 or whoever it is. So we just got to, you know, we have high expectations of what we want to be as a program. So, yeah, we played well, but I didn't think we were going to come in here and lose by 30 either. I knew we were going to give them a game. That's the next step. You got to make shots, and especially good ones. So, yeah, I thought we executed well, and we got to the basket. And the difference in that game was right there. Is they, like I said, they came down and made a few big shots. They got to the free throw line, got fouled. We came down and didn't make shots. And that's what basketball is taking care of opportunities and making big shots. And didn't do it.
So there you go on that front. They come up short. This is a type of game that they need. They need more of these games against big opponents for when they go through the WAC. I saw where New Mexico State drilled New Mexico. They actually got in a brawl on the court before it started. New Mexico State. New Mexico State's going to be good again.
Yeah, they almost beat Kansas on Saturday in Lawrence.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's going to come down to New Mexico State and GCU in all likelihood. You and I will be in Vegas.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. But
really?
Yeah. I think Utah Valley has a really good, deep team. And Marley talked about it in a little bit in the postgame last night. The WAC is a lot better than it was even 2 years ago. Like, 2 years ago, it was New Mexico State and then Grand Canyon, and then just a bunch of other schools. But he feels the bottom is starting to balance out a little bit with the top. So we'll see.
Looked ahead on this. So Kansas plays Villanova this coming Saturday.
Should be a win.
At
Villanova's
home.
Not great.
Villanova's ranked, but...
But they're not the Villanova of last year.
They have South Dakota against Kansas next week on a Tuesday. And then they come here to play ASU. Kansas is ranked number one in this week's AP poll.
So as long as they hold serve, they will still
yeah.
be number one.
And ASU is ranked 20th. They've got to go through a tough stretch, going to Georgia and to Vanderbilt. And I'll give Bobby a lot of credit. It's great that they're playing those teams. But the idea of if ASU wins those two and have the number one team in the nation here, it's a Saturday night game. ASU is ranked 20th. They'd probably be 15, between 15 and 10. That would be a hell of a great night. It really would be. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He is the Iron Man. Eric, as always, Eric Sorensen, the great one, is here day in and day out. We are moving over now to work on our TV show on Fox Sports Arizona and, of course, on online content at sports360az.com. Have yourself a great day.